What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey everybody, Mark here. Nicole has mentioned a few times on mic that I should do more shameless self-promotion of my band. So, shameless self-promotion it is.
Look into my eyes, do you know this dance? Do you know this dance? Do you know this dance? See behind the lies as you make your plans. Will you take a stance? Do you know this dance?
That's right, the Slackademics have a new album coming out soon and our first single just dropped. This song, This Dance, is actually a re-recording of a tune we had on our EP a couple years back. You can find it on all the streaming services, so give us a follow. We're going to release a new single every few weeks, and the album itself, Pass Fail, will be available for pre-order come January. Probably you should have been hearing this song under my voice during this promo, but then it would be weird because you'd be hearing my voice singing and my voice talking at the same time. So, how about the bridge? I think the song has a good bridge. We got some cool backing vocals, a cool bass line by Brian. Check it out.
Speak up, let your body talk. Move up to the front row. Gear up for the time of your life. As we define our own destiny.
Give us a follow and a bunch of listens on streaming. And now, ads!
I have an H in my name, and I see H-O-L-E, and no
other... The one true way to spell.
The one true way. And no other Nicole's ever spelled their name like that. It's been the curse of my life.
Hey, I'm Mark.
Hey, I'm Nicole, and this is Nevermind the Music.
Nicole, did you listen to Paramore back in the late 2000s?
In the late 2000s?
You know, kind of around when they first came out.
I was busy listening to like Eric Clapton and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young during that period of my life. But I like appreciate Paramore now as a band. They've been around a really long time.
So do you not know their song, That's What You Get?
I'm not super familiar with it. I never have really heard this song before.
Okay, wow. So you've heard the newer stuff, but this was from their album Riot, which came out in 2007. This is where they first broke out. Like, this isn't the song that broke them out. There's that song Misery Business. You know that one?
Yeah, I do know that one.
That one was a bigger hit, but this comes from the same album. And this one hit 66 on the Hot 100, so it's not a top 10 or anything like that. Misery Business was 26, but it's still a pretty well-known song. This is what thrust them into the spotlight, even though, you know, some of them were still teenagers, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, she was definitely really young when they first broke, for sure.
So for me, I didn't hear it when it first came out. I heard it when it was on Rock Band 2, which I had for the Wii back in 2008 when it came out.
The Wii.
Did you play the Wii? Shout out to Nintendo. Nicole's making fun of you.
No, I just think like it was funny. It was a funny thing. Like make your little Weeble or whatever. What were they called?
A Mii.
A Mii.
Yeah, a Weeble, I think, is another a trademark term that you maybe have just infringed upon.
Oh, gosh.
But yeah, so I play this on Rock Band the first time and then later kind of heard it either on the radio. That was probably... Late 2000s is my nadir. Can I say nadir? The bottom of the trajectory of my listening to the radio. I never listened to the radio in the late 2000s. So I was too cool or not cool enough, possibly, depending on how we want to say it. But in any case, there's some things I definitely want to talk about this song. I think there's a lot we can dig into. It's a really cool song written by Hayley Williams, the vocalist, and also Josh Farrow, who wasn't in the band at first, but then later was in the band, and also Taylor York, who I think also may have been in and out of the band. This band has a lot of transitions. But what I want to talk about is something called motivic development. This is a little highfalutin. A motive is a lot like a motif, except fancy musicians call it a motive. What's the difference between a motive and a motif? Fancy musicians.
I love jargon.
Yeah, so a motif, is like a little theme in, you know, a book or whatever. So a motive, which is also spelled different because fancy musicians, is like a little tiny piece of a musical idea that then you use to sort of infect the rest of the piece of music. So in a good way, infect, right? So a musical motive that probably you've heard.
Yeah, super well known.
Super well known. A little famous ditty by Ludwig von Beethoven from 1808. That's his fifth symphony. That little single third, it's an interval of a third, then gets extrapolated and is the seed of so much more music. So, for example, here's the next few seconds. So maybe you can hear how that da-da-da-dum then keeps changing. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Different pitches, different instruments are playing it, slightly different rhythms. It's all sort of the same, but different. You following?
Yeah. Imagine being like Beethoven's music teacher. I mean, like, dude, pick a different motive, you know?
I think being Beethoven's music teacher probably would have been pretty stressful for a lot of different.
But they didn't Beethoven know was a hard he dude was to Beethoven
love.
At
oh,
the
I
time.
Know. No, like, it's not that. It's just I think Beethoven was a hard dude to love. Anyways, we call that little fragment a motive, right? That little tiny piece we might call a head motive because it's the very beginning of the piece. And what he's doing there is what we call motivic development. And this is not something that classical composers like Beethoven are the only ones who do. This happens in more modern songwriting as well. For example, here's the head motive of The Way You Look Tonight. This is the Frank Sinatra version, but this is originally written by Jerome Kern.
Someday, when I'm awfully low.
So just that someday, that initial downward leap.
Mm.
And then when I'm awfully low, that little turn he does, later in the phrase, we get this.
I will feel a glow just thinking of you.
So not only do we have I will feel a glow, which is sort of like based on when I'm awfully low, but we get the high note, love you, instead of someday. It's an expansion of the earlier jump, right?
Yeah, it's really like, especially in that song, it's really comforting when he hits that. Like, it feels very familiar and very comforting to me.
You don't think it's just the silky baritone of Frank Sinatra?
I think it's all the things.
But yeah, well, what it does is we've taken that initial idea, that falling note, someday, and we've expanded it to be a bigger jump, and we call this motivic development. More examples of it. Lip Sync with Funky Town from 1979. So that's the beginning of the vocal line there. That's our head motive. What do you hear in there? You're hearing a bunch of notes rising.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta make a move to a town. They're jumping up a third, and then ride for me. That high note is falling down a third. What do we get in the hook later in the song?
I want to take me to Funky Town.
What we get is a rising third instead of a major one, a minor one. So they've changed it. The point I'm trying to make is you take this little starting idea and you morph it throughout the song. Okay, so we've got little musical ideas that then we mess with, we develop to make bigger musical ideas. Here we go again.
That's what you get when you let your heart play.
I'm going to kind of try to prove to you that almost every note in this song is related to almost every other note in this song. And
prove
I think
it.
That's a good thing. I think that's cool. So take a listen to the very first vocal phrase we hear Haley singing when she says, no, sir, in the first verse.
No, sir. Well, I don't want to be the blame, not anymore. It's your turn to take.
Okay, so I'm going to call that no, sir. No, sir. That's our head motive. Two notes. That's it. What do we hear immediately after that? We hear another set of notes that isn't quite the same.
Mm-hmm.
No, sir. Well, I don't want to be the blame, not anymore. It's...
I want anymore to use that head motive, but it doesn't.
It
but
doesn't,
I
but
want it to.
Almost does. Because listen here. This is what happens next.
And why do we like to hurt so much? I can't decide.
Mm-hmm. What is that why do we lie? What's going on there? Well, here's the head motive again. What do we have now? So when she goes, why do we lie? Instead of, no, sir, why lie? It's just expanding that interval. We call
that
intervallic expansion.
Wow.
Interval is the distance between the notes. So what she's done, or they all wrote it. She's singing it. They all, a few of them wrote it. She's expanded that interval. So when we listen to that head motive in the verse, all we have is the original line and then an expansion of it.
No, sir. Well, I don't want to be the blame, not anymore. It's your...
That I don't want to be the blame is based on the no, sir.
Hmm.
And so what we get is this morphing into, and that's a simple motivic development. But it's not just that. They go even a step forward.
And why do we like to hurt?
That to hurt. Listen here.
It like
that's
matches
the same
it.
Notes backwards with one of them lower than the other. What we're doing is massaging our original no, sir, to create... You're laughing at me talking with my hands.
I'm laughing
the
at like, the word see. Massage.
Oh, yeah, I see.
And like right. You're massaging.
I'm massaging. Oh,
for
I shouldn't
listeners.
Have made the reference. No, I see. I shouldn't have made the reference to it because now it's going to be confusing. So no, sir becomes to her, which is the same notes, just flipped backwards and one of them lower. Every note that I've played for you is based on that original first line.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What are you thinking?
I think like I wonder, and always whenever you teach me this stuff, I'm like, did they do it on purpose? Like, did Hayley Nicole Williams, when she was writing this song, think like, I'm going to use a head motif and I'm going to do like a interval thing, like whatever that word that you used was. Like,
so,
I wonder if she like actively thought like, this is yes, in this verse, I'm going to like use this motif and repeat it in the chorus. And that's how I'm going to get the listener engaged. Like, or do you think she just had instincts to do it that way because she's a good natural talent?
Her full name is Hayley Nicole Williams.
That's
so
my name.
You either A, said that because you want to say Nicole.
I love
B,
it.
B, she's a child actress. Or C, she's a serial killer.
Yeah.
Because I have never heard her with the full three name.
You need a full name.
Or she's in trouble with her parents.
No, but I just like to say Hayley Nicole Williams because my name's Nicole and she spells it the same way as me. And I have an H in my name. And I see H-O-L-E and no
the one
other,
true way to spell.
The one the... true way. And no other Nicole's ever spelled their name like that. It's been the curse of my life. So I was really pleased.
For sure. Yeah, you're a paramour solidarity. So, okay. So to your question, like this is going to come up in every single episode we do, right? It's, did they intend this? And my answer, as always, is kind of does it matter? Because it's happening. But I think in this case, did the teenagers who wrote this song know exactly that this was called a motivic development? Maybe not. But this song is about the tension between your head and your heart, right? It's the tension between when you follow your heart, and I'm sure we can get back into this later. You follow your heart, you get burned sometimes. Maybe you need to stop and think and follow your head. At least that's what I'm getting out of this tune. So I feel like that's kind of interesting, this question of, is this song about the failures of the heart composed intuitively, which maybe is through the heart, or is it composed, you know, did they sit down and think about it? And my answer is probably.
You think they probably like, it's they're just their intuition.
Their intuition, because they're talented musicians, even as young as they would have been at this point. Their intuition gave them a good result that then nerds like me can look at and go, oh, they actually did something Beethovenian there, right? And Beethoven, by the way, folks, Beethoven's just the beginning. Like, this gets crazy. If you look at, like, Brahms and Mahler, you could have an entire hour-long symphony based on one little shred of a melody.
Wow.
These dudes took it very seriously, as do Paramore, apparently.
Yeah, they love it.
So anyways, we get, eventually, to the hook.
That's what you get when you let your...
You tell me, that's what you get. How does that relate to No, Sir?
It seems a little bit higher,
okay.
But like it matches the, it matches.
Yeah, she added a higher note.
Yeah.
Here's the head motive for the 50th time. And now here's the hook. We just add that higher note.
Mm.
And what it gives us is a catchy full melody, right? Not just two notes. It's not just a head motive. Now it's a theme.
And it's actually really smart because it like helps you learn the song. I feel like Paramore songs like are made to sing in your car as an angsty teen. I think that's what they're made for. And when you use conventions like this, it makes it really easy for people to learn how to sing the song themselves or play it in Guitar Hero or whatever it is. And I think that that's smart marketing.
I think it's not just smart marketing. It's like good songwriting. I hate to oversimplify it, but like I probably should have led with this. But what's the point of this? Why does Beethoven take da 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 dum and make a whole melody out of it? Why does Lips Inc. take the beginning melody of Funky Town and then make the hook relate to it? Why? Because it makes the song fit. It makes it cohesive without being boring. She could just have the whole song go, no, sir, no, sir, no, sir, over and over again, and it would be boring. But she could also have the song completely different every phrase, and then it would just be, well, not catchy.
Not
kind
catchy.
Of not fun.
And this is like a very, very catchy tune because like you feel like even on first listen, you feel like by the end of the song, you know how it's going to go. Like you know how to, you can hum along to it. And I think that's really important.
And so if you hear this hook, what's going to happen next?
I feel like it's going to go up again.
It's going to go up again. There's going to be more motivic development. Here's what happens next. We start with the head motive. We get the hook. And then we get this. It's the same.
It's all the same.
Just slower, longer. We call that an augmentation. How's that for
I'm writing
a
all of this down.
How's that
like,
for
I'm
a music theory word?
Taking notes.
So the whoa, I obviously can sing this so lovely.
You sound like you're in a SoCal punk band.
I was in a SoCal punk. Well, punk is giving us too much credit for teenage
we'll say ska.
Myself. Well, I was definitely in a SoCal ska band.
Yeah. Was it Real Big Fish?
I was in
Imagine.
A SoCal high school ska band.
Oh, buddy.
Which is not the same thing. That's right. Never shall we talk about them again. So
that's too bad.
But what does this remind you of? Nah, 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 nah.
It reminds me of like Nelson from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Teasing,
like,
right?
Teasing.
This part of the hook.
Oh, maybe she's teasing them.
We started here.
No, sir. Well, I don't.
And we've ended here. She's not saying na 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 na.
No.
But this particular rhythm and interval, that descending, we call it a third, na na, and then the up to the higher note, na na na, that is like the playground teasing motive. And that's what you get. That feels like teasing. And this song is sort of about criticizing your actions, your own actions, I think. I don't know what this all means, but it fits as a song. Like, I don't know that it was necessarily deliberate, but they knew this song was catchy. They knew how to make it catchy.
Yeah.
This is why. That's
what I'd
say.
They knew that, like, intuitively it worked.
Or one of them studied composition and listened to Beethoven and
I don't think.
Jerome Kern.
I mean, so this was like their second album.
Yeah.
So what year is this? 2007?
2007.
Do you know a lot about Paramore as a band, like in their development?
No, not really.
It's really interesting because Hayley Nicole Williams was...
Middle name. Got to give it.
going to keep doing it. So she's the only member of Paramore that's like consistently been a member of the band. And so many people have come and go. And she's just like the nucleus of this band. Like it's her. And a lot of people have like come in and out. And when they first formed the band, it was her and two brothers. And they... admittedly were just awesome together. And they were signed to Atlantic Records, I think. And Atlantic said, we're not going to put you out on our main label. We're going to put you out on like a subsidiary, like smaller label we're connected with, only because it was better for their marketing to be released on like a smaller, presumably more indie label.
So they could like come off as a pop punk band, not a pop band?
Yeah, so they could come off as like, if I said like outgroup, would you know what that meant?
Yeah.
But this idea that if they released them on their main label, they'd be too mainstream. And they wanted them to have the appearance of a more indie band. So they put them out on like a secondary label, still under Atlantic. So us as consumers would think like, oh, I just discovered this band that no one's heard about, like, and get a following of people that were like more outliers or more in the outgroup, because that's what they wanted their brand image to be. Which is like interesting because maybe they didn't use their head motif as intention, but that marketing was very, very intentional to appeal to like an adolescent audience. Isn't that wild?
Since we're talking about pop punk and all that,
yeah.
Like my era would have been a little before these guys in terms of when I was obsessively following every little band. But I can remember like late 90s, the record label would matter. Now, the 90s is different and that has changed, right? Selling out and all that was this huge thing. But you would just see the list of bands signed by like, I don't know, Epitaph Records or somebody, and you'd go check out that band if they were signed by that record label, one of these indie record labels, or you'd get a compilation CD at that point in like, you know, 98 or whatever.
Right.
And you'd hear a new band and then you'd go buy that album or something. For me, I'd buy it used at Music Trader in Poway, California, San Diego burbs.
Shout out to Music Trader.
Shout out to Music Trader, which I'm sure doesn't exist anymore because it's there's no record stores. Maybe, I don't know. But in any case, I would get a compilation from some record label I liked and it would teach me who I was supposed to like.
Yeah.
And so some of that is people I actually would have liked, but some of it is almost like I'm going to give these, whatever band in those cases mostly, a chance because they've been sort of vetted by a cool authority figure, which is the indie record label.
Yes.
And I wonder, I wasn't in high school anymore in 2007, so I don't know if that's still tracked in the post-Napster world, but I bet I bet Atlantic thought to some degree it does.
They definitely understood this idea of adolescent, and the term is relativistic thinking. That in adolescence, we are programmed to go against authority. Like that is our job as a teenager, is to take what we're told and do the opposite. And I think putting Paramore out on a subsidiary or a secondary label to Atlantic was really smart marketing because it appealed to this like very proven psychosocial construct of that they call relativistic thinking. So in other words, people are more likely to question others' assertions and less likely to accept information as absolute truth when they're a teenager. Like, you can't tell a teenager what to do because they're going to do the opposite.
Isn't that what Hayley's doing in this song? Is telling somebody what to do? But she's like criticizing herself for not listening to the good advice.
Mm-hmm.
Or is she criticizing somebody else? Either way, she's almost speaking from the perspective of a, quote, adult, right?
Yeah.
Like someone who knows better. An authority figure, but there's like a malice to it. I don't know about malice, but like that's what you get is either self-loathing or at least highly critical, right?
Well, maybe what she's doing is looking back at things that happened when she was younger with her now more developed brain and realizing, hey, you did it wrong. I see that now. And that's something that's really common for teenagers. Like, think of stuff you did as a teenager that you look back and you're like, I would never do that now, right? That's because now there are certain brain substrates that are more developed than they were then. So like in the teenage brain, your frontal lobe, which is like the driver of the bus that is you, it's like your main decision-making center of your brain, your like frontal cortex, your medial frontal cortex, your prefrontal cortex, all of those things aren't developed for biological women until they're 18 and for biological men until they're about 25. And that's when like you start realizing what a rational decision is. And as a teenager, you're so, okay, are you ready to come with me on this adventure into like a brief neuroscience? Are you emotionally available to talk about neuroscience stuff for a minute?
What kind of hypocrite would I be if I was like, I will not go down this rabbit hole. I just played Beethoven and Frank Sinatra in the same podcast that we're talking about Paramore. So
sure.
Go for it.
If you, we're going to nerd out, right? So get ready. Have multiple systems in your brain that control your functioning, right? We know these to be true. You have this frontal lobe that like it maintains your executive functioning, maintains your decision making, helps you make like fundamental choices.
Right.
But you also have this really, really cool region of your brain called the limbic system. Do you know anything about the limbic system?
I don't know anything about the limbic system.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to teach you.
It feels like what it feels like to me is like an astronomical thing. I hope humanity one day settles the limbic system.
I hope so too. We'd be a lot better
off. Like a generational ship. Like
oh my
not
gosh.
My children, but my children's 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 children will land on the limbic system.
I'm so excited.
What is it?
For
what
this.
Is it for real?
Okay, so you have a central and peripheral nervous system in your body where all your nerves feed into your spinal column, and then your spinal column shoots all that electrical energy up into your brain for like processing. Your brain and your brain stem connect really right, kind of right into the limbic system. For this podcast, we can say that. And in your limbic system are things like your amygdala, which regulates like your fight or flight concerns, that feeling of like, I have to run out of here, I'm in danger, right? Your basal ganglia, which not only being really fun to say, also regulates that kind of energy. We also have the pineal gland in the limbic system. The pituitary gland that regulates your growth is in the limbic system. Really, like, for this conversation, you can assume that everything that makes you, Mark, up as a human with, like, a soul and a spirit and memories and dreams, all of that stuff lives in the limbic system in your brain.
Wow, okay.
And we all have one. It's awesome. We also have other...
But that's not all your brain.
That's not all. That's
some of your brain
like,
isn't a part of it.
No, it's actually a pretty small geographic region of your brain. Because you also have your frontal lobe that we talked about, your parietal lobe, which is in like the top of your brain that regulates like the sensory input. You have your temporal lobe, your occipital lobe that all do different things.
All right.
Okay, sorry.
I'm with you. Where are we going?
Okay, so when you're a teenager, your limbic system is like pretty well developed. Like it's there. It's where it needs to be. It's cooked already, but your frontal lobe isn't. And your limbic system is feeding your frontal lobe things like dopamine, that's like a reward neurotransmitter, serotonin, which is like your happy chemicals in your brain. That's all being fed into your frontal lobe through your limbic system from something called, get ready for this, the mesocortical limbic pathway.
Hang on.
Yes.
The mesocortical limbic pathway.
Yes. It is like a highway of dopamine in your brain, right?
All right.
A good way to think of it. And the tricky thing is for teenagers is while that highway, that dopamine highway is well-paved, well-developed, the frontal lobe isn't. So it's like feeding dopamine to essentially like a drunk driver on the highway. So that's why teenagers make really stupid choices and do really risky things because they're like, they're feeling that dopamine push, that like excitement and that energy of like falling in love for the first time, or like, it's like feeding a drunk driver a bunch of cocaine and expecting them to drive straight.
So the limbic system is still providing the fuel, but we don't have anything like, there isn't a governor there that's like stopping us from just flooding the engine and flooring it every stop. Yes. I don't know anything about cars.
But yeah, like you just don't have that emotional regulation as a teenager. And I think when Hayley Nicole Williams writes this song.
Can we just call, let's just call her Nicole for the rest of the podcast?
That would be great for me. When Nicole writes this song, I think she's writing it after her mesocortical limbic pathway is a little bit more solidified and her frontal lobe is a little bit more solidified, because if she's over 18, it would have been. So maybe she's looking back at the weird shit she did with her teenage paramour, like what I did there.
Nice
and
job.
Realizing like, hey, that was actually fucked up, right?
Yeah.
I wish we had known better.
Well,
right?
It's also like she's upset with herself because of heinous actions somebody else took too. It sounds like this guy like was a jerk and she's chastising herself for letting that happen. That's kind of what I get from this song.
Yeah, I get that too. And that makes sense that like you'd look back at the things you put up with, especially as a teenage woman. We do put up with stuff because we think that's what love is. And then as your brain develops and the other ecological variables in your life change, you start to realize that that isn't what love is. And it could have been, it should have been something different, but we didn't know that at the time.
Well, and the dude, presumably in this story, you said men's systems like self-regulate at 25. So he's even further away from that understanding at the point, depending on, I don't know how old the character is, but at the point of this story, he may be still fully incapable of processing this effectively.
He most likely is.
So not to obsess about music and bring it back, but we started talking about how they made this song catchy through this compositional songwriting trick, motivic development. And I'm thinking about now Paramore as a band, despite the sort of rarefied air of this super awesome singer and these super cool guitarists and stuff, there's something relatable to a song like this.
This song, we feel like we're part of it almost. And I think that the repetition and the motive like helps us feel connected to it musically. But also like what she's describing and what she's singing about helps us feel connected to it lyrically, because we've felt that too. And Paramore's really good at staying with their audience as they grow and develop, that we're developing too. And we can see ourselves in the songs because it is super relatable. Like everyone has a story of when they were a teenager in love and did something stupid, right?
Right. Totally agree. That makes a lot of sense. It's like the catchiness amplifies the relatability. That's the good way to put it, I think. That it wouldn't be catchy if it was just the same thing over and over again, because it would be tiring. We're like pulled in and on this journey with her of self-reflection, which is very smart of Nicole to do, right?
Nicole's are known for being incredibly intelligent, especially the ones that have the H in their name.
That's right. I mean, importantly, though, Rock Band 2, what is your experience, Nicole, with rhythm and music video games?
I got into Rock Band 2 a little bit. I really was into developing my little character. Anytime I spent on the Wii, I was
you're me. I'm
my
Wii.
Me.
Yeah. Okay.
I can still see her. And like my me is the ideal version of myself. Like she had the cutest little outfit, great haircut, like really cool glasses. I just like really was into my me character.
I think your me, by the way, your me's dead.
What do you mean?
I think your me's dead. My daughter
dead?
Started playing the Wii. She's of the age. She's interested in video games.
Awesome.
But the Wii is like an easy, accessible. But we fired it up because I was like, oh, the Wii's an easy way for her to play some video games. The Mii's are all gone.
What?
There's no Mii's. We had to make her her own Mii. She wouldn't have had a Mii, obviously, because she didn't exist. But all the Mii's are gone. So I think you might need
what
to fire
happened?
Up the Wii and see if baby Nicole is still alive. Wait, Nicole, can we read our outro credits like we're a blasé teenager that really doesn't care?
Sure.
I guess. Never Mind the Music is hosted by Nicole Vacher. And me, Mark Poppany. I also produce. You know, honestly, I don't care, but if you feel like it, you could leave a rating and a review, but honestly, why bother?
And let us know what you think on social media. Like, no one says social media anymore. Just say socials. It's better. We're Never Music Pod on all major platforms. whatever that means. You can also email us if you want to go into your time machine back to like 2012 and send actual emails. You can email us at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. It might as well be a Hotmail address. Every so often we'll do a mailbag episode. I don't even know what a mailbag is, but that's fine. We'll try to answer your questions there.
Yeah, I guess.